Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot, and the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Welcome in another week here on the Hoosier Report, October 8th, this Monday edition of the program underway. We do this every weekday, 11 a.m., complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. Glad you're with us. Appreciate everybody. I know we've got people local listening on the Big X, 1450-96.1. I know we've got people that stream us. I know we have people that listen after the live show on a podcast. No matter how you're listening, we're so glad to have you with us along for the ride, we hope, each day here on the program. Let's take a look at the guest lineup. It's presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, I'll have our daily Hoosier headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. A look at some interesting topics. We're going to talk a little IU basketball, a little Juwan Morgan. We'll talk some high school football as well. We'll hand out game balls from week 8 of high school football now in the books. Tournament pairings came out last night as well in football. So we'll spend a little time talking some high school football on this Monday. Segment 2, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star is with me. I want to cover a number of things with Zach today. I want to really talk and get his opinion on IU football on the road at Ohio State over the weekend. IU football, very competitive through the first half. They were even competitive into the third quarter, got away from them a little bit in the fourth quarter. But with that said, after a disappointing win the week before on the road against Rutgers, and I know a Big Ten road win is coveted no matter who it is, but Indiana sure didn't come out with any sort of firepower that would make you think they could compete with Ohio State for a quarter, let alone two and a half, three quarters or so of the game. So I think some interesting things with Indiana football to talk about, especially as they head into what I'm going to call maybe the biggest and most pivotal game of the season with Iowa coming up this weekend. It's homecoming. It gets Indiana a step closer to bowl eligibility if they could put together a big victory. Indiana opened, I think, around a 4-point underdog in the contest. So it's a game that Indiana should be competitive in, has the potential to win, but it's not a give me whatsoever. This isn't a bottom of the Big Ten Iowa team. They are competitive. They are strong in their own regard. But I think it's a big game. If Indiana could win, that would give them great momentum moving into a home game against Penn State. And, you know, Indiana fans, if you can compete with Ohio State for three quarters, can you compete with Penn State, who is also really good, maybe not as good as Ohio State, but can you compete with them for four quarters? So I think a really pivotal game coming up this week. We'll cover all of that and more football stuff with Zach Osterman when he's with us. Also, an interesting flip in football recruiting yesterday. And we're going to talk also the difference between football and basketball recruiting. But you don't see basketball players commit and rarely flip their commitment. You also don't see basketball players commit to a school and other coaches continue to recruit that player. That's kind of an unwritten no-no in college basketball. That happens almost with every commitment in IU football. Think about Rondale Moore. Think about other big commitments from local players that have committed and then flipped their commitment. But Avon High School, it's up in Indianapolis area. Running back Samson James, he committed to Ohio State. He decommitted from Ohio State on Sunday after the IU-Ohio State game, and then by Sunday night he was committed to Indiana. So we'll cover that. Also some IU basketball stuff when Zach is with us in segment two. Segment three today, Chad Gilbert, Charlestown Athletic Director and IHSAA Executive Board Member. He'll join us. We got a lot of local stuff to talk about, football pairings. We're in the final week of high school football, regular season football coming up, and then the pairings, obviously, you got sectional pairings. Some teams get a week off depending on the class and how many teams in their sectional. But some interesting things to talk about with Chad. We'll get with him later in the program today. That's the guest lineup. It's presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Headline number one, a couple IU basketball notes. These are interesting. IU coach, or I should say Archie Miller, tweeted out over the weekend, quote, first week of practice in books, Juwan Morgan gold jersey, exclamation point, plus 31 to the next closest player, hashtag everything earned. Look forward to seeing if someone gets his gold jersey next week, hashtag standard. So what that means, we've talked some about Archie's philosophy and practice, having a gold jersey, just a simple gold jersey that a player wears as opposed to their IU top. I think it's even a little shimmy type thing they wear over top of their IU practice gear. A point system kept with almost everything they do to kind of have competitions, not just within specific drills and specific things they do in practice, but a competition throughout practice. And that extends not only from practice to practice, but for the entire week as the running total continues. Juwan Morgan, a senior, plus 31 points, marks ahead of the next closest player. That's the kind of stuff you want to hear about your senior leader coming back for his final season after testing the professional water. So that shouldn't be any surprise. He's going to be the leader for that team right out of the gate. He'll be expected to be the leader. He'll have the ball in his hands. He'll have, I'm sure, a green light to do a lot of things that other players won't. Also yesterday, Seth Greenberg with a tweet that he loved Juwan Morgan and that Romeo Langford, I think the word he used was elite, but still progressing. Interesting to hear some of the national guys and their thoughts when they bounce around to some of the practices across the country. Also, practices, from what I have been told, are generally being closed right now at Indiana. A lot of times early in the year, high school coaches will get an opportunity to go to IU, Purdue, Louisville, Ball State, local practices within a drive to see and get ideas for drills and how to structure practices and just fresh ideas for the upcoming season. It's kind of a just in the coaching trade. That's not just basketball, but that's baseball, football, and I'm sure most sports allow the high school coaches to come in for the most part because you want those good connections. They help with recruiting. They help with just general support of the program. Indiana and Archie Miller, from what I understand, has had lots of guests in his practices over the years. A lot of high school coaches, even from our area, have taken advantage of that and had the opportunity to see how Archie Miller does things generally in practice. In fact, a year ago, during a coaches clinic that takes place this past weekend every year, they allowed the entire coaching clinic, once the instruction was done and the speakers were done, to come over to Assembly Hall and slide in and watch a little bit of practice before everybody departed for the day. That was the plan again this year, from what I understand, at the Hoosier Basketball Coaches Association Clinic. It's always at Bloomington South every October. And this year, they couldn't do it. And it's because Indiana, from what I was told from a couple high school coaches, has closed practice until October 15th. So basically, the first 2.5 week or so of practice, from what it sounds like, Archie Miller has decided to close practice to most everybody, definitely large groups, things like that, it sounds like. So interesting to hear, because this Indiana team, early on with a lot of fanfare at Hoosier Hysteria, now trying to close the doors and really get some things accomplished and get some things done in these early season practices. And I know they go hard all the time. We see the type of work the players do, even in the off season, in sand pits and with conditioning work and individual workouts and group workouts. But I have to believe that these early season practices, the length of them, using the maximum time, I'm assuming that they are allotted by the NCAA, are very, very tough. So understandable, I would think, for most to want to get your first 2.5 weeks of practice with little to no visitors, little to no hassle, little to no interference during these important practices. But I did think that was an interesting note, that there seems to be a very business-like approach with Romeo, with the IU team as a whole, for this upcoming season. Also, headline number two, high school football out of the weekend, some interesting games, some great performances as week 8 is now in the book. We take the opportunity to hand out some game balls each Monday. Marion Lukes of Charlestown, he has to get one this week. 311 yards, 3 touchdowns for Charlestown. And there was question coming into the game, would he play? How much would he play? Was he okay? He was injured in the late minutes of the first half, the Week 7 game, but he comes back and has a huge performance once again. He will give Charlestown an opportunity to compete in each and every game in the sectional. He has that type of ability, that type of firepower with him, and he had another big performance on Friday night. Speaking of big performances, sophomore Austin Opel, New Albany, 293 total yards, 3 touchdowns. He had all 3 of the Bulldogs' TDs in the game as New Albany got back on the winning track, or I shouldn't say back, but continued their winning ways. It's a New Albany team that has only lost 3 games, 2 of those games by 1 point. One of those games they led at halftime and were outscored 21-0 in the second half. So Opal, just a sophomore, but a key for New Albany. We know that they're going to play Columbus East. I'll talk about the pairings here in just a moment, but he will be such a huge key in that contest. And he had a big performance. He gets a game ball for Week 8 of high school football. Another regular name on the list, Caden Williams of Providence, 211 yards, 5 total touchdowns. Providence has no problem in the closing quarter or so with Milan to get a big win as they head into Week 8 of high school football. And Winkers Wright, Floyd Central, 237 yards, 2 touchdowns. Floyd Central won against Jennings County on the road. Now, of course, Floyd Central, New Albany hook up on Friday night in high school football. The pairings were out yesterday in high school football. Again, there's some weeks off for all 6A teams. So Jeff will get a week off on October 19th. 5A, some of those sectionals will get a week off. Some of those teams, I should say, in 5A sectionals, depending on the number of teams in each sectional, will get a week off. All other sectionals will begin on October 19th. So we're within a couple weeks away from postseason football. I want to quickly roll through the pairings in case you haven't seen them. 6A football, sectional 8, Jeffersonville will host Franklin Central. Just a 4-team sectional. The other side of that bracket is Columbus North at Center Grove. So probably the two better teams playing each other, opposite of Jeff in that game. The Red Devils will host Franklin Central in their first game. Here's a great sectional. Hard to believe that there's an opportunity, at least on paper, for games to be more competitive than 5A sectional 15, a 5A sectional. Right out of the gate, the only game that will be played on October 19th in that sectional is Columbus East at New Albany. It's a rematch. It's back at Burke Field for the second time this season. When they played the first time around, New Albany won by 1 point, Columbus East defeated New Albany by 1 point. It was absolutely a thrilling contest. So awesome to see those two teams draw right out of the gate. I think a lot of people that have watched more football than me this year would tell you that talent-wise, Columbus East and New Albany in that sectional might have the most talent. But Seymour will play the winner of that game the next Friday. Getting a great draw is Bedford North Lawrence. They do play at Floyd Central on October 26th, but they've got a 1-game semifinal to get to a championship game the first Friday in November. And if you could draw the bracket out, probably Bedford North Lawrence getting the ideal draw. And Floyd Central's not a bad team at all. By no means am I saying that Floyd Central couldn't beat them or make it a very competitive game, but it's a very close in record, close in talent sectional, and every little benefit will count for whoever's going to win that thing. If it's going to be Columbus East, again, if it's going to be New Albany to pull a big upset, they're going to have to go through one or the other, you know, and then play Seymour the next Friday, and then perhaps Bedford in the championship game. That's obviously a very, very tough path over 3 weeks of high school football. Sectional 23, some of the local teams. Silver Creek is at Scottsburg in their opening round game. Also in 3A sectional play, North Harrison at Lawrenceburg. Cordon is at Brownstown. Charlestown at Salem. Charlestown has a fairly easy opening game. And then, of course, they would get Brownstown in their second game of sectional play. 2A sectional, Providence. Very interesting to see their draw. They will host Switzerland County in the first round. They will get the winner if they're able to defeat Switzerland County of Perry Central and Eastern. The other side of that bracket is Mitchell at Clarksville, Paoli at Crawford County. I think on paper, Providence in the top half and Paoli at the bottom half of that sectional would be favorites, so they both get opposite drawings and very well could meet for the championship in early November. Rock Creek in 1A, it's their first year of high school football playoffs, and they actually get to host Eastern Green, sectional 48, Class A, a 7-team sectional. They get to host right out of the gate in their first sectional appearance in the IHSA. So interesting stuff for Rock Creek. That's a look at the headlines presented by Hoopsters Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Zach Osterman, IU football, IU basketball. We'll talk recruiting and more after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday show. It's always fun to talk with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach is the IU insider for the Star, and he's with us Mondays to talk IU football, basketball, and more. Zach, we got to start with IU at Ohio State. I tell you what, for three quarters, it was maybe over three quarters, it was a really, really strong performance for Indiana, even though the final score ballooned just a bit, 49-26 the final. I thought Indiana showed some real promise on the road in a tough environment against a really, really good Ohio State team. Again, especially early on, especially through the first half, even into the third quarter, there were some bright spots in the loss.
Yeah, and we've seen Indiana do this, you know, against the Ohio States and Michigans. Really, maybe even make a case for against Michigan State earlier this season, and I know that wasn't a terribly inspiring game of football in any respect, but Indiana has undoubtedly gotten more competitive with the top end of the conference, and I know fans will say, and I think it's understandable, well, when are we going to close that gap finally and win one of these games? I can understand that sentiment. I also think every time I say I'm not trying to make fun of Rutgers, I then turn around and sort of say something that sounds like I'm making fun of Rutgers. But I also think it's instructive to look at the way Indiana plays Ohio State and Columbus versus the way that Rutgers plays Ohio State and Columbus earlier this year, goes to Columbus, and if I'm not mistaken, loses 52-3. And I've seen Indiana lose games like that before. I've seen Indiana lose games by 30, 40. I can even remember one by 63 points. To top end teams in the Big Ten. I do think it's worth pointing out when Indiana is more competitive against an Ohio State, it's maybe also a little bit of a bellwether for saying this is all the more reason why it's fair to say that Indiana has clear separation between itself and the bottom of the conference. And I think as long as you are maintaining maybe some of that increased competitiveness against an Ohio State, you're consistently beating the Illinois and the Rutgers and the teams like that you need to. And if you can be getting to bowl games, then I think from Indiana's perspective, you can be making a genuine case for progress. Now, is it progress at the pace that fans are, you know, some fans want? Probably not, but it is progress. It's still undoubtedly growth from where this program was not as long ago as maybe some fans would like to think.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star, I guess, talking about Indiana's loss at Michigan State. Very competitive through halftime, even into the third quarter, 49-26, the final score. You mentioned separation between IU and the bottom of the Big Ten Conference. With that said, looking at the rest of the schedule, Iowa's not at the bottom of the conference. Penn State isn't. There are some games moving forward Indiana should have either a real competitive chance to beat or some of those bottom of the conference teams where you would like to think at this point that separation will prove true the rest of the way. I think there's some reason for, you know, after the Rutgers win, yeah, it's a road win and it's a Big Ten win, so it matters and it should be a good feeling for the IU team and players to a certain extent and fans too. But there wasn't that you didn't say, oh yeah, there was some domination at times there. There was some separation that you talk about there between IU and Rutgers. You didn't get that feeling. Even though the Ohio State game is a loss, Indiana showed some flashes of hope and some flashes of doing some things right that against other teams in the conference should give them a pretty good shot. All that said, there's reason for excitement, I think, the rest of the way, starting with this Iowa game for homecoming this weekend.
No, I think you're right. The flip side to that, if you're Indiana, is you've got to make that pay off. And what I mean by that is you've got to play Ohio State really well, but then also play Iowa really well. You know, the sort of second sentence that I'd put behind I've seen Indiana play Ohio State tight before is I've also seen Indiana come out the next week and put in a performance that you really didn't feel like built on what Indiana did against an Ohio State, against a Michigan, you know, against a Penn State. And does that look like beating Iowa? I think so, honestly. And that's not a slight to Iowa, and that's not a prediction that Indiana is going to win. But I think if you're Indiana and you want to point fairly, in my opinion, to a game like Ohio State on the road, competitive, as you said, for three-plus quarters, only kind of gets away when Indiana maybe has to start taking some chances, taking some long risks to try and get back in the game. If you want that to mean something, you've got to back that up by coming home and putting in an equally strong performance at home against a probably more manageable, more beatable Iowa team, getting a homecoming win, getting to five wins in mid-October, and making yourselves not just a realistic bowl team, but maybe a team that could pick and choose a little bit where they want to go bowling when it comes time. And I'm not saying that Indiana's going to do that. I think that's particularly for a young Indiana team. That's kind of the next challenge. But even when I've even seen experienced Indiana teams struggle with this. And, you know, Kevin Wilson used to talk all the time about how the program, whether it was players, coaches, fans, whatever, needed to learn how to handle success better. And I know that nobody's going to look at a 49-26 loss at Ohio State as success. But I think you can look at it in some ways with the game, the way the game played out, as progress. But you need to let that progress yield something positive at some point. It can't just be consistently saying, well, we were right there for, you know, 51 minutes against Ohio State, and we took this team to overtime, and you know, if not for this play, and this play, we probably beat this team. You've got to make it pay off. And so now, it's kind of one of those where, like I said, I think Indiana's going to be the underdog going into this weekend. I don't think by much. I think they may have opened as like a 4.5-point dog to Iowa on Sunday. I think that there's every reason to believe Iowa can come in and win this weekend, but if you're Indiana and you want last weekend to really mean something, then last weekend needs to be sort of the building blocks for getting a win this weekend.
I tell you what, for a number of reasons, a lot of what you've already touched on, I think the Iowa game is obviously a really big game. It's homecoming, which is a fun event for the university itself, you know, as a whole, but also to get bowl eligible, it's a big step forward, which I think that's going to happen, and maybe even to take that step forward in the win total that we've talked about before some as well. I think that this game will have a big step or part in that, and then, of course, continuing that momentum that you just mentioned out of the Ohio State game, even though it was a loss, that's the things you got to look at. So, to me, as I think about it, obviously there have been some really big games over the years. The Ohio State game really stands out a year ago to open the season in Bloomington as big football games with a lot of fanfare, at least heading into them before the game kicks and before we know obviously what the final score is going to be. But I think this Iowa game, it's got a big feel to it because coming out of Ohio State and some good things, you want to continue that. But you also have Penn State the following weekend. That's a home game, a win over Iowa. A 5-2 Indiana team could really help boost that crowd, that energy for that contest, which will be another tough one for IU football as well.
Well, and I think you're right to bring up the Penn State game because one of the advantages I would have argued of this schedule coming into the season was that you didn't necessarily have a run of games that you just said, boy, Indiana's going to have trouble managing a win in any of those. You know, you didn't have a situation where Indiana had to go like, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, road, home, road, and you just thought, well, Indiana better do a whole bunch of its work early because by the time it gets to that stretch, it's going to be brutal. It's going to be really difficult. The flip side to that is, if you don't win this weekend for whatever reason, all of a sudden maybe you are staring at one of those stretches, and you go very, very quickly from 4-1 down to 4-4. And again, this is a young team. This is a team that hasn't known a lot of success. I you know, there are precious few players, major contributors on this team that were major contributors on Indiana's last bowl team. There are even fewer players that were contributors on both of Indiana's bowl teams under Kevin Wilson in 2015 and 16. And so, you know, this is the reality of life in the Big Ten East for a team like Indiana, is that there's always an Ohio State or a Penn State or a Michigan or a Michigan State waiting around the corner. Take care of your business this weekend. Then you can kind of afford to just say, hey, you know, Penn State, we're going to give it our best shot. We're going to get ready. We're going to play hard. But what happens, happens. That's not one that's going to make or break our season. Lose this weekend, and then all of a sudden, you maybe start to build a little bit of genuine concern and genuine doubt, because then I can start to build you a world where you're on a three-game losing streak at 4-4, going into a short week at Minnesota, winnable game there, but it's on the road, and where's your confidence at the end of October? Can you recover, or all of a sudden, maybe everything's starting to get away from you faster than you think? So, it really is. Listen, before the season, I laid out, you know, my game-by-game predictions on a podcast, on one of our internal podcasts, and I predicted that Indiana would be 4-2 with the four wins and the two losses that they have at the midpoint of the season here. Iowa was probably the first one that I really reached when I said I thought Indiana would win it, and I predicted 7-5 overall. Like you, I think a bowl game is absolutely on the table. But this is the kind of game that you better win if it is going to be.
I was looking at a story from Kyle for my next question, or a tweet from Kyle for you. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, I guess. Before we get away from football, I saw Kyle, I think he was one of the first ones out there, saying that running back Samson James decommitted from Ohio State over the weekend. I think it was yesterday, and that he had a high level of interest in Indiana, and it didn't take too long for that level of interest that Kyle tweeted about to become an Indiana commitment. Interesting to see. A lot of times you'll see football players, standouts, flip from a Indiana and then realize, I can play at Ohio State. I've got a scholarship offer from them now. So they'll flip, and it's much more common to flip your commitment in the sport of football at the prep level than it is basketball and some other sports. But you don't normally see it from one of the big-time college football programs flipping down, some would say, to another team, a lesser team maybe in the conference as far as success or tradition goes. I found that interesting. Any backstory there? Do you know much about the running back from Avon High School in the Indianapolis area?
Yeah, I think he's stayed – I mean, you're right, first of all, and it's worth pointing out for those who don't follow football recruiting as closely. Decommitting in basketball, for example, it's not that it doesn't happen, but it is fairly rare, particularly among what I guess you'd say are your more elite prospects. Decommitting in football, you know, there's an old Steve Spurrier line that any commitment before signing day is just an announcement of who's in the lead. And so it's, you kind of look at different commitments, and there's guys that you can say, well, he grew up an IU fan, he lives in Indianapolis, IU is one of his better offers. You know, he's probably pretty clearly committed to coming to IU. But you do also get the guys who basically stay on a recruiting board, even if they've committed somewhere else. And I think it's probably fair to say that Indiana, even if Samson James committed to Ohio State, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but as you point out, that happened very fast yesterday. You'd have to think that there was some consistent communication going on back and forth between IU staff and James to say, you can be a difference maker, you can stay home. You know, and I think about a player like this, he's a top 200 back, you know, nobody's, he's not like a top, it's not like he's a top 10 player in the entire country. Nobody's going to claim that Samson James is going to come in and rush for 1,800 yards his freshman season and eventually be a first-round pick, and he may. But it's sort of like talking about Big Ten Network money, where, yes, Ohio State and Indiana are both getting the same cut of the Big Ten's TV money, TV revenues, contracts, BTN, all that. It's a lot more impactful in Indiana financially because it's a much bigger percentage of the budget. And because relative to its peers, Ohio State has always been very financially powerful. Indiana has not. You talk about a guy like Samson James going to IU football. Hey, you know what? Ohio State realistically will go find a high three-star or another four-star running back. They'll bring him in. They'll fill that hole. Ohio State, it's unlikely that come signing day they'll be hurting for having lost Samson James. They clearly wanted him, but it's a lot more impactful for Indiana to be getting guys like that, guys like Bo Robbins, who's a four-star defensive end from Carmel, Devin Matthews, a four-star safety from Florida who had an interception over the weekend in Columbus. It's much more impactful when Indiana's getting those players just because they don't come along as often. And of course, you sort of look at it and say, well, now is it going to be Tom Allen's job to hold on to him? And I think that's fair because I'm the one who just said, you know, decommitments and flipping in college football or in college football recruiting anyway, very common. The one thing I would say in this particular case is I've seen Indiana flip kids who had maybe an old, you know, Antonio Allen had an Ole Miss offer. David Kinney was committed to Iowa. I've seen Indiana flip kids from other Power 5 programs, arguably other Power 5 programs that are maybe a little bit greater in stature than Indiana. But it's not like there's an offer out there that Samson James, other than maybe, I guess, Alabama, that Samson James would be waiting for to say, well, I really love the idea of staying home, but, man, Ohio State wants me. You know, he's already kind of walked away from Ohio State to pick IU. So you would imagine it's Indiana's got a good chance of holding on to this one through signing day.
Yeah, interesting. You know, just hearing you talk some more about the football side of things and recruiting, obviously you and I and other guests on this program, we talk a ton of basketball recruiting, given Romeo Langford's recruitment last year and given Indiana's involvement with players that are really of interest in the state, like Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks again this year. But recruiting has become mainstream in both sports. With that said, it's amazing how different the processes can be in football. If IU basketball was recruiting a player that had committed to Ohio State, it would just, you know, obviously before a signing, it would be really looked down upon by other coaches, and there would be a lot of rumbling out there in the college basketball coaching community about that. It's kind of a known thing that for the most part, you don't contact someone. Maybe if there's been a coaching change, that can obviously open things up. And there could maybe be a couple other things that would make a coach check in with a player that they used to recruit before their commitment. But it's amazing how different the recruiting processes can be between basketball and football, even at the same level of schools.
Well, and it's also, you know, with football, especially in a place like Indiana, it's a lot more targeted in a way. And what I mean by that is, you know, Archie Miller is going to have his archetypes of players that he wants. And he says, you know, this guy fits our system. This guy may be talented, but I'm not sure that he really fits what we're trying to do because of his skill set or his position or whatever. But at the end of the day with basketball, there is always going to be at least some element of basically just talent acquisition and saying, you know, we have these needs to fill. Let's go get the best guys we can find that fill them. And then we'll make it work. We'll figure out rotations and all those sorts of things. And some of that's down, too, to the fact that, you know, careers can be a lot more fleeting in college basketball. Players can leave as soon as the spring after their freshman year, whereas obviously in college football you're required to stay for 3 years at least. But in college football, especially at a place like Indiana where maybe you're not going to just be able to wade into the deep end of the talent pool and just start sort of plucking commitments from really, really high-level guys, you got to be real clever sometimes and real smart about how you identify certain prospects, how you build your relationships with them, how you get them committed. It's great to get a Samson James. It's great to get a Bo Robbins. Those are absolutely important recruits. You know, Tywan Mullen is an Army All-American from Florida whose brother plays defensive back at Clemson, and he's committed to Indiana right now. It's great to get those players. it's also worth pointing out, Dan Feeney was a low three-star, you know, offensive guard slash tackle from the Chicago area. Jason Spriggs only had one high major offer, and that was Indiana. Those two guys both became All-American linemen. You got Tevin Coleman at Indiana because a bunch of Big Ten schools, Nebraska, Michigan State, Illinois, Northwestern, a few others wanted him to play corner or safety. He wanted the opportunity to play running back. Indiana went all in on letting him play running back. And so that not just got him to commit to Indiana, but a guy like, I mean, Tevin Coleman had Michigan State knocking on his door, suddenly making some promises about giving him a shot at running back in the days leading up to signing day. Jason Spriggs was invited, if memory serves, to both Pitt and Penn State with sort of the promise that, hey, if you find a way to make a visit here in the last couple weeks before signing day, we'll find a way to get an offer for you. And he declined because of the long-standing relationship that had been built with Indiana. And that's the way that sometimes you have to be more clever, and why it's always exciting for fans when they get the high-level recruits, especially at a place like Indiana where maybe you don't get to celebrate getting an Army All-American very often, a top 150, top 175 guy, you know, four stars, keeping guys in state that normally would be leaving for Michigan and Ohio State or the SEC. But it's also important to kind of look at some of maybe the guys who aren't quite as exciting in terms of rankings, because in football recruiting, it's those guys that can be as foundational, and it's those guys that sometimes the coaches have been really, really heavily sort of involved in identifying them as the kind of talent that you not just recruit and commit, but you really build a relationship with because you need them foundationally for 4 or 5 years, and they turn into really good players for you.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star. Lots of football talk. I do want to hit you on a couple basketball things quickly before we let you go. Hoosier hysteria in the books. The team has really locked into practicing. There was a coaching clinic in Bloomington that's normally at Bloomington South each year, Hoosier Basketball Coaches Association. It's a great gathering of Southern Indiana coaches for the most part. And last year, one of the things that really highlighted the weekend, the Friday-Saturday coaching clinic, was an opportunity to go watch IU practice on Saturday afternoon at the conclusion of the speakers and those sorts of things. And obviously, Archie Miller has done a lot, it sure seems, to work with coaches' associations and to go reach out to high school coaches, especially when he was first hired, to develop that relationship and open that conversation with them, even if it was a school or a coach that didn't have an IU or a Big Ten caliber player at the time, probably good work preparing for the future. That said, this year they did close practice. I was told practices have been closed, even to guests like high school coaches, to October 15th. So it sounds like, based on that, after the fanfare of Hoosier hysteria, with some young players, with some returning players, Archie Miller wants to really focus in with no visitors in the gym and get to work for this upcoming season, and maybe keep some of the fanfare and some of the, I don't want to say unnecessary, because you always want to have coaches and relationships, especially in the state of Indiana, but keep guests away. Focus on what the task at hand is, getting ready for the upcoming season, going through some of these tough and long early season practices.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't know that. I think that's really interesting to hear. I think there's definitely a sort of feeling, not expectation management, but maybe a feeling that, listen, I mean, I've said before, I think we've talked on the show, I think Indiana's going to be a work in progress for a while. I think Indiana's aggregate talent level is impressive. It may very well prove to stack up with any other team in the Big Ten. But when you've got so many freshmen and sophomores, when you're replacing some guys who were, you know, kind of real sort of bedrock leaders, you think about a Robert Johnson, you think about a Colin Hartman, when you're replacing some guys like that, there are going to be hiccups. You know, there are going to be moments where you maybe have to challenge a guy who wasn't previously vocal because he didn't need to be, to speak up a little bit more, where you're going to have a little bit of a position battle going to try and get the best out of, you know, one of two or three players at a specific spot on the floor. And I think there's definitely been a feeling just generally around the program that Archie Miller has wanted to block out a lot of noise. For example, there it was made pretty bluntly known that Romeo Langford would be available at team media day, and then he wouldn't be available again until the season started.
Right.
There wouldn't be any, you know, Romeo wasn't going to be going to Big Ten media day. There wouldn't be some day where you could come in and the national media could get 20 minutes with Romeo, that kind of thing. It was just like, you want to do it. It's this day. He was available. We got to talk to him for 15 or 20 minutes. We got to ask him all the questions we wanted. And then it was, now it's back to business. And I think there is a business-like approach to the start of this season. There probably was a little bit of one to the start of last season as well. We just were more kind of caught up in everything that was new about Archie Miller and his staff. And so you sort of said, well, you know, maybe this is all just part of the transition process. This really may just be kind of what Archie Miller's about, quite frankly. And from my perspective, I always want more access. But I also look at what coaches are going to want and try to square that circle as best as you can, in terms of understanding that they've still got a job to do. And with this team in particular, a younger team, a team that's got the potential for a lot of depth and probably a lot of success down the line, but also one that maybe is going to need some time to really work that out. It probably shouldn't be too surprising that it seems like they are trying to keep the noise level at a minimum.
Zach Osterman, great stuff today. Zach, thanks for an extended chat. IU football, some recruiting stuff, basketball as well. Always fun, a great way to start Mondays. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely. Stay with us. Chad Gilbert, Charlestown's athletic director, IHSA executive board member. He's with us next. IHSA football pairings out last night. We've got all the pairings for the local teams. Some interesting early round matchups that we'll talk about with Chad and some other things as well. Stay with us. A Monday edition of the Hoosier Report continues after this on the Big X Sports Radio.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Welcome back. Final segment on this Monday edition of the Hoosier Report. So glad to have you with us. Don't forget we do this show each weekday, 11 a.m. right here on the Big X Sports Radio. Chad Gilbert is one of our regular guests on Monday. Chad is Charlestown High School's athletic director. He also is an IHSAA executive board member, and he and I talk Southern Indiana sports headlines on the program each Monday. Chad, the big story, at least locally, I think, coming out of the weekend, isn't really week eight, although there were some big high school football games and definitely some big individual performances on Friday night across the area. But I think the big headline is the sectional pairings in football are now available. They were released. They were prepared last night. And local teams from across the state now know what their path to a sectional championship or maybe a run beyond that in the state tournament looks like.
Oh, it's a lot of fun this time of year. This is what the high school teams, they prepared all season for this. So it's their opportunity to get ready and make a run in the state tournament. The one thing that people may not realize, Matt, is football has six classes where other sports have four. So the sectional rankings, it might be a little bit off. You may look for the 3A and think, where's Silver Creek and Scottsburg? Well, that's because they're playing in 4A. You may see the 6A and say, where's New Albany? That's because they're in 5A, where Jeffersonville is in 6A. So it's kind of weird if you're not up to date on it. It's worth checking out because it kind of gives you a little food for thought. What if we added a couple more classes in basketball? How would it shake up? You know, with a Friday night, Friday or Saturday, like regional section where you play in the morning and night, kind of something to shake things up a little bit. That might be pretty cool. But it's interesting seeing where everybody goes in the 16 sectional in football.
Chad, how do you mention adding more classes in basketball? Let's have a conversation about eliminating some classes in basketball. Let's go to two classes.
Matt, you've been around long enough now. It's 2018 now. Man, you know everybody's a winner.
Yeah.
How can we not give more medals and more rings? Everyone's a winner in 2018. I see Little League baseball teams. I've got a national championship ring. I've got a national runner-up ring. I've got a McDonald's All-American ring, and I've got a state championship ring. I see guys go to E-Town and win a softball tournament or a baseball tournament, and their ring's bigger than mine. It's 2018, Matt. Everybody gets rings.
You're right. You're exactly right. Sectional pairings, 5A sectional. I know you're obviously watching the Charlestown sectional, but in 3A, their opening game. We'll get to that in just a moment. But the 5A sectional, Columbus East back at New Albany for the second time this season. It was a one-point win for the Olympians last time. First and closest challenge that they've had, at least by a one-point margin in many, many years. Bedford and Columbus East will play this Friday. Bedford, they feel like they've got a good shot at the Olympians, but until you knock them off, whether it's regular season, Bedford could do it Friday, or whether it's a sectional, the Bulldogs getting it done at home on October 19th, that sectional across the board might be the most competitive that I can find in the state when you look at records, regular season scores, talent, and a lot of different factors. That's going to be a good one.
Well, looking at that, nothing draws your eye more to the sectional than that Columbus East New Albany rematch. New Albany had them on the ropes earlier this year. East, a Bob Gattis team is never over until that final horn goes off when you're going against Bob Gattis. But New Albany had them, and I'm sure they're licking their chops in anticipation for this rematch. Coach Cooley and the guys over there, they will be ready for this game. But when you look at the brackets, if you're Chad Gilbert, Matt Dennison, looking at the brackets, you got to think Bedford's sitting in the catbird seat. They're sitting down there waiting. Bedford had an extremely, under-the-radar good year this year, and I think that they're waiting to see who comes out of that upper bracket, beat up or not, to advance to the regional. So that will be a compelling sectional, a lot of fun, a lot of excitement in there.
Chad Gilbert, Charlestown AD, IHSAA Executive Board member, is with us. What about Charlestown? Marion Lukes, there was some concern about his health. He has another big night on Friday as the Pirates win again. He now set a school record with his performance on Friday. You guys have one regular season game left coming up this week before you enter sectional play on the road at Salem. That'll be a rematch from conference play in the regular season. He has been outstanding, and better than that, when I went through, we always hand out the hypothetical game balls each Monday to recognize some of the top high school football performers. We'll do the same with basketball and other sports coming up here this winter. But just to get their name out, to let people know what they accomplished on an individual and team basis, Marion Lukes has been on that list for us almost every week. And in addition to that, a lot of the players that each week have had an opportunity to be on that list of game ball winners, they're underclassmen. They're young guys, which is exciting about the future of Charlestown and Southern Indiana football.
Marion Lukes is an outstanding player, man. He's someone that every time he gets the ball, there's an opportunity to score. He is straight line speed, extremely fast, but he also makes you miss. And what I mean by that one is he's got moves. He can stop on a dime and go left to right. He's going to be one of those, you see guys and you think, oh, that kid's pretty good, but he's playing 3A competition, he's playing 2A competition. At the next level, guys are looking for your 40 time, your squat time, your bench. They're looking at different things that they figure they can put you in a position to succeed. Marion has those intangibles. He's got a good frame on him. I would guess Marion's going about 190, 195 right now. It would surprise me next year if Marion's in that 210, 215 range. He works extremely hard in the weight room. He works out of the weight room, and he works in practice. So he's a constant worker. He's got God-given abilities. So he's someone that you might see at the next level. He's gaining attention. Old Jeffersonville coach Bob Redmond called me yesterday. He and Chris and Deion Branch are doing a little thing together, and they're coming down to Charlestown to take a look at Marion. Marion's been to Cincinnati. He's getting more looks as the weeks go on. And for him to break a record that's, going on 30 years old, Richard Lanham was an outstanding running back. He was in school when I was there, and Marion broke his record with a game left. That just says something about the type of player he is. And it's good for him. A couple things go in with that one. One, Coach Hawkins gets him the ball. And number two, you got guys out there blocking for him and doing the things that help Marion get along. Football is the ultimate team sport because there's 11 guys on the field. So he's not doing that on his own, but he's doing a lot of special things this year for the Pirates.
Yeah, no question about that. Chad, we only have a couple minutes left. Girls basketball officially begins Monday. Now, we've talked some about the early practices and all sports as of the last week of August being able to go 2 hours, two times a week during the week. But girls basketball, that's that first start of the basketball season. They actually start practice officially 1 week from today. A lot of people on fall break this week. A lot of people return back to fall break in time for the start of girls basketball practice next Monday. We're there. We're real close to the hoop season.
Oh, it's right around the corner. And teams are ready. Kids are ready. I saw where Jeffersonville, Torrey Hanley committed to Southern Illinois, Edwardsville. Special place in our family's heart. That's where my wife, Amy, played at. So excited for Torrey to go down there. Samantha Matthews at Charlestown has committed to Tampa Division II college. So, you know, she's going to be on the beach. Happy for Samantha. And then, you know, you see a lot of good looks. I hear Nan Garcia is invited down to Kentucky's Big Blue Madness out of Jeffersonville. So there's a lot of talented players around. You would think that the big rematch of the year is early on, Jeffersonville against Bedford. But there's going to be a lot of talent and a lot of outstanding teams this year. You know, you can't help but think, you know, where is Lily Hatton going to end up? She's had an outstanding four-year career, and I would think that she's going to commit here in the next month or so. But there's just so many good players. And the one to keep an eye on who has a chance to make a nice run in the 3A this year is Salem High School. So it's a lot of fun for the kids, a lot of fun for the coaches, and it's hard to believe that's this time of year. Hopefully the limited contact has helped teams prepare, help them with their skills, help them with their shooting, and they'll put it on for real starting Monday.
Chad, we got to get out of here. Have a great fall break. We'll talk with you again next Monday.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, that'll wrap things up. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back Tuesday at 11 a.m. Again, glad to have you with us. Complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.